This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust, and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
Now on Food FM, you're listening to Bread and Butter with Caroline Kenyon. Caroline and her guests make sense of the world through food, from politics to farming, making and cooking.
Online, on smart speakers and on Listen Again. This is Food FM.
Hello, I'm Caroline Kenyon, and it's my enormous pleasure to welcome you to Bread and Butter, the show where we talk to all sorts of fascinating people doing all sorts of intriguing things in the world of food and drinks. And in fact, drinks is what we're going to chat about today, which is, I think, pretty ideal. It's quite a warm April day. I'm actually based in North Lincolnshire, but a London friend has told me it's going to reach 22 degrees. So welcome to Bread and Butter, Jack Scott. You are one of two co-founders of Dash Water.
Hi, Caroline. Yes, great to be on. And 22 degrees sounds like good conditions for selling soft drinks. So that's music to my ears.
Absolutely. I bet you look at the barometer quite closely.
Yeah, no, it is. My dad's a farmer and he's always looking at the weather, and I'm sort of turning into him, always looking at the week ahead and what the temperature is going to be.
Absolutely. Well, you know, the scary thing is that you do always, I'm afraid, turn into the parent of the same gender. There's no escape. I can hear myself saying things my mother used to say. So tell me a little bit about yourself and Dash, Jack. So you come from a farming background. So sort of, I'm assuming that food and drink is pretty important to you and has been in your upbringing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I do get it asked a bit, sort of how I've come into food and drink. And I think being around, you know, crops and agriculture growing up has really made me want to go into the world of food and drink. I didn't necessarily want to go down the agricultural route, but I've always sort of had an eagle eye for brands and how brands work. So Dash, we started 5 years ago, and Dash is very simple. It's just freshly sprung spring water infused with wonky fruit, and it doesn't have any sugar or sweetener, and comes in a 330ml aluminium can.
Well, it sounds like it's ticking lots of boxes, Jack, but I think you're being very modest. I think you've rather sort of compressed your journey to bringing this lovely brand to market. And I mentioned that I was chatting to you, to your friend. She said, oh, I know their branding so well. And you've really made a sort of an impact on the market. So tell me, you know, there you are growing up on your family farm. Where is the farm? Yep. Which part of the world?
So we're in Shropshire, and it's an arable farm. Shropshire, I'm sure all of your listeners will know, but it's a beautiful, big, very rural county in the West Midlands. And we grow wheat, potatoes, oddseed rape, barley. So quite a traditional arable farm. And then in terms of me getting involved at home, we were always during the school holidays doing various jobs for Dad. Luckily, my little brother has now gone home to farm, so Dad hasn't been left by himself. Having had three boys, that wouldn't have been very fortunate. But so we used to spend a lot of time helping Dad out in the summer holidays and various different holidays throughout the year, which was great fun.
And so then, having broken the tidings to your father that farming was not going to be your destiny, what did you take yourself off to do? Did you go to university? Did you go straight into the world of work? Did you think, I'm going to be an entrepreneur? What were all the thoughts going through your mind?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I, from a very young age, I knew that I wanted to go into food and drink. And then so once I left Bristol University, I then spoke to a couple of sort of entrepreneurs in the food and drink world.
That's interesting. Who did you chat to?
So one of which was a chap called William Kendall.
Yes,
a very successful entrepreneur in food and drink, and actually a farmer as well. So we had a very good chat about, you know, agriculture, and then how, you know, I didn't necessarily want to go down the traditional route, but did want to get involved in food and drink. So he, at the time, had just started with a couple of others, Causton Press. And I then worked for Causton Press for three years on the sales team there. And that's where I met my current, my co-founder, Alex.
How fortuitous. And did you both kind of recognize pretty quickly that you wanted to start your own brand together?
Yeah, I think so. Causton was a fantastic brand and went through, you know, tremendous growth while we were there. And we were given brilliant experience throughout the business. And then also during that time, we were obviously out looking at the market and the drinks world. And we saw that there was this gap in the market in the UK for a great tasting drink that didn't have any sugar or sweetener. So that's when Alex and I started to look at that space. And then we started looking into how we would sort of bring that to market. And when the idea of using wonky fruit came about, when we were speaking to farmers about buying fruit off them, and realized that there was, you know, a real issue at farm level with lots of fruit being rejected by supermarkets due to the way that they looked. So, sorry, I've jumped forward a little bit there. But we, while working at Causton, we met and saw that there was an opportunity. And then once we had left Causton Press, it took us around 2 years to launch Dash into Selfridges. So it was quite a long process to get it to market to how we wanted it to look and how we wanted it to taste.
That's so interesting, Jack. And there's lots of questions I want to ask you about various different things. But tell me, did you have a backer at that point? Were you self-funding? How did you get the thing off the ground?
Yeah, it's a good question, because in soft drinks, the barriers to entry are quite high. So the aluminium minimum order quantities was around 120,000 per flavour to print on cans. So we'd tried to do it at a very small scale, but it proved to be very difficult. And we had many an occasion where we tried to use a mobile canning unit, which is often used in breweries, to can a small amount of liquid. So we found that, you know, if we were to do it properly, we needed to have some investment at that early stage to invest in the brand, the look and the feel, and to obviously make the first production run. And we raised some money off friends and family, which got us to a point where we could then, you know, start speaking to other angels who had been through the process before, and we could draw upon their experience. So we've got some fantastic investors at Dash, including the founders of Sipsmith, so Sam Goldsworthy and Fairfax Hall. We've got Logan Plant, who's the Beavertown Brewery founder. Other people such as John Ayton, who started Links of London. So we've got all people that we thought could really add value to our journey. Another Fiji Water director. So they've been, you know, instrumental in our growth and really helping us get through those different sort of barriers, I suppose.
Well, congratulations, because that's a pretty stellar lineup of backers, and you must have delivered an incredibly good pitch that was compelling to bring those kind of names on board, because yeah, they get approached 100 times a day, I should think. So well done. That must have been such a boost to your confidence.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. And, you know, we often get asked now how, you know, how you shouldn't approach those people. But I would really tell people to reach you know, reach for the stars. And if you can get the right introduction, there's always that opportunity to have a coffee or have a Zoom with most people within food and drink who, you know, are looking for, you know, the next good, great brand, and, you know, they want to be part of that journey. So if you can communicate and get that meeting in and have the right proposition for them, then, you know, it is something that they're looking for.
Absolutely, I completely agree. I think all the nice people are really open to those kind of approaches, and then the nasty ones you don't want to deal with anyway, so that's fine. They can go off and be nasty. So it took you 2 years to get into Selfridges. So I mean, Selfridges, I know, regards itself as quite a patron of new food and drink brands, so that also must have taken quite a lot of persuasion.
Yes, exactly. So it didn't take us, I suppose, 2 years to get into Selfridges, but it took us to develop the brand and to create, you know, the proposition of Dash. It took us a lot longer than we expected. But you're right, to have your first listing as Selfridges, we thought it, you know, would be the perfect sort of launch partner. Again, they are looking for brands that you know do offer something different, so they are on the lookout. So it's about bringing them on the journey. I think that's what we did well on, is that the buyer that we spoke to there, we were keen to not just approach when we wanted to launch with them, but bring them along the journey from an earlier stage of development and make them feel part of the journey, which meant that, you know, when we came to her with the final product, she felt invested and much more likely to put it on her sought after shelves. So it was a great first listing for us, which gave us the springboard to then have conversations with other, you know, specialty stores, luxury retail, and then go on to places like Whole Foods, Planet Organic, As Nature Intended, which was also an important part of our growth and building out, you know, the brand equity in the correct places.
Absolutely. So tell me how you've grown your brand awareness. Have you advertised? Have you done it all through social media? Have you used ambassadors? What kind of approach have you taken?
Yeah, it's a good question. So to begin with, it was certainly, we built the brand in quite a traditional way within soft drinks. So we, Alex and I both obviously came from a sales background. So we would have a list of, you know, the coolest spots in London. So a list of, you know, 500 or 600, and that included, you know, independent delis, coffee shops, boutique gyms, specialty stores. So we would make it our mission to get Dash into all of those places around town. And those, what we call beacon accounts. So those are the accounts that other stores are looking at and will often, you know, want to stock you as well. So that was an important part of building the brand awareness in the early days. So distribution, I suppose, is where we've focused on as a brand, and giving people the opportunity to see it and then to try it. We're so lucky in food and drink that, you know, the product on shelf is obviously great advertising. So if you can get it into the right places and the right people drinking it at the right time, that does an awful lot. And that's what I would say to, you know, startup brands, to not forget that, and perhaps, you know, refocus on that rather than spending more time on having a very sort of polished Instagram feed, for instance, which obviously, you know, social media and paid social now is a very important part of our brand. But to begin with, I would say that, you know, getting it on shelf really helped us build the brand and obviously bring revenue into the business.
That's so interesting, because one of the things that I've noticed over the last few years, and I think it's, you know, it's a symptom of all sorts of things, the B word, otherwise known as Brexit, COVID, hitting supply chains, and now the cost of living crisis is that actually choice is getting less on the shelf. And I just wonder whether that's something that's been impacting you, or, you know, that you're finding clever ways around it, or is it something that's not so relevant in the drink sector? Is it more applicable in food?
Yeah, no, I think that's, no, it's an interesting observation. I think supermarkets are, you know, what we've heard is that they are trying to bring down the number of SKUs that they are selling. And then as a smaller brand, you know, we've always looked at different ways in which we can get our product to consumers. So now over 40% of our mix, our sales mix, is from our direct-to-consumer business, which is our website, which is very sort of unconventional within sort of traditional soft drinks. So that's people buying Dash on our website, and half of those people are on a subscribe and save model where, you know, you'd get your delivery bi-weekly or monthly. So there are, you know, ways in which you can be, you know, more agile and bypass the sort of traditional retail. Another channel, for instance, which is very good for us, is Amazon. So with it being a heavier product, you know, people tend to sort of over-index online when purchasing heavier products. So Amazon is a channel that we concentrate on heavily as well, which has been very good for our growth and getting the product out there.
Yes, no, that makes complete sense. And the kind of subscription model in food is becoming really a thing, isn't it? I think I had a fortnightly subscription to an oat milk during the first year of lockdown. I have to say, I did accumulate quite a sort of collection of boxes of oat milk, which I couldn't keep pace with. So I stopped it just because I need to sort of catch up with what I had. But it makes sense. We're so time pressed now, aren't we? We just think, oh, well, you know, my Dash delivery is going to come what may. That's something ticked off the list, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's got to be the right type of product. You're right. So I think we're fortunate that with Dash, you can drink as many as you like throughout the day. You wouldn't get a subscription of tonic water or energy drinks or fruit carbonate drinks, because those, you know, may be more a bit impulsive. Or whereas, you know, sparkling water is a habit, you know, it's a relatively good habit to get into. Well, you know, there's a lot worse things that you could be doing. So having that cold can of sparkling water to enable you to, you know, drink more water and have a bit of excitement throughout the day, we've seen has worked well with our customers.
Yes, I mean, it seems like a sort of very, very nice and very healthy treat. I mean, we all need little treats, don't we?
No, absolutely.
So tell me about your plans for expansion, Jack, because I can't imagine that you're going to, you and Alex are going to let the grass grow under your feet. I believe you're exporting already?
Yes, no, we are. We're definitely exporting. Actually, really excitingly, we've just come back from Australia, where we locally produce in Melbourne as well. So we use local wonky fruit all from Australia, using spring water from Victoria. So that's really exciting. And we've just launched in their two major supermarkets over in Australia. So building a small team over there and looking to replicate what we've done here in the UK to be, you know, the number one seltzer brand, you know, in a category that's really growing. And we're excited to be, you know, the number one brand here in the UK. And we want to replicate that over in Australia. So that's something that's high on the priority list at the moment, which is super exciting.
That is indeed very exciting. And how about America? I know, you know, singers always want to break America. How about soft drinks?
Yeah, well, it would be sparkling water. Our style of drink in the US is absolutely huge. And I think that would be something in the future that we would like to explore. However, it is a very I don't like to use the word saturated, but it's a very competitive market out there within our category, with lots of brilliant brands. So we don't feel it potentially as fertile as other areas to begin with, and would need a lot of capital, upfront capital, for us to have a good stab at the US. So perhaps that would be something for a bit later on in our journey. But I would love to do the US at some point in the future.
It would be quite an adventure, wouldn't it? So, and tell me, how much do you make of your Britishness when you're talking to countries around the world about your brand? Is that something you play on?
Yeah, it's a good point. I think, say for Australia, for us to work out there, it was very important that it was made in Australia. So the British part is nothing to do with it. So I think it depends on the market. I think more and more people want more local products from a sustainable mindset. And so it's about making sure that you are talking about the right things in particular markets. So when, you know, in Norway, they have, you know, fantastic spring water and different things. So you have to be careful. So to answer to your question, we don't necessarily talk about the Britishness too much in other markets.
No, that's fascinating. And is that the thing that struck me when you were talking at the beginning of our chat was the fact that there's got no sugar in it. Now, to me, that's immediately really attractive, because I gave up sugar about nearly 7 years ago, I think. I mean, I have to say, the one thing that I haven't given up is alcohol, and I drink modestly, yep, just to reassure you. But I would feel really sad if I couldn't have a nice glass of wine on a Friday evening. But yep, I don't eat any biscuits, chocolate, cake, or anything like that, and I just feel so much better for it. And I do scan ingredients quite carefully. You know, if I was going to buy a little snack because I'm traveling and I need a energy boost, I check to see it's got no sugar in. So I know there's a lot of people like me now, aren't there, that, you know, regard sugar as a bit of a poison.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, you know, we've seen that, you know, we've been taught by, you know, very successful large soft drinks companies that, you know, you need a level of sweetness when you have a soft drink, and we're trying to disrupt that. And we believe that people's palates are becoming more sophisticated and don't need that level of sweetness. So for us, you know, sugar is really important. You know, there's 30 grams of sugar in a can of Coke, and there's none in Dash. But also the next thing for us is sweeteners. So we think aspartame is the devil, and we don't think that artificial or natural sweeteners are good for people, because you're playing tricks on your body. You're saying to your body that you're going to get sugar from that sweetness, but you're not. So you're playing tricks with your insulin levels. So we're big on no sugar, and we're big on no sweetener. And we, you know, we hopefully have proven that you can have a great tasting drink without either of those. So the education on that has been really important. So getting out and speaking to people and sampling the product has been, you know, really important for our growth.
I think the word education is key, because like, you can completely re-educate your palate.
When you have a cup of tea and you weaned yourself off sugar for the first bit, you know, it doesn't taste very nice, but, and then slowly over time you really wouldn't want sugar in your tea. And we've, you know, seen that with Dash. When people first try it, they might think, oh, you know, that isn't quite sweet enough, but then you really grow into it, and you then wouldn't want a normal sugary soft drink. That's what we found anyway.
Exactly. No, I completely agree. So tell me, Jack, we're just sadly coming to the end of our time talking together. if you're going to come back on Food FM in 5 to 10 years' time, what exciting news would you dream of sharing with us? Where would you like to see
your baby? So we've been going for 5 years, so we believe we're just getting going. We've got an amazing team here in London. We're a small team of 16, and I would love Dash to firstly be a real sort of household brand and really disrupt in a major way the soft drinks world. I think that then brings further weight to our mission celebrating wonky fruit, so really shining a light on the issue of food waste in the UK, both at farm level and throughout the supply chain. So I would like to be making a real difference within food waste, but also creating a really iconic British drinks brand that does business in the right way and is become a staple within the households across the UK.
Sounds like very laudable ambitions to me. Jack, thank you so much. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thanks, Caroline. Great to chat.
You're listening to Bread and Butter with Caroline Kenyon.
To find out more about Food FM and our content, go to foodfmradio.com.